mitzvah of tzitzis is appears in the Chumash in two different places, in Bamidbar and in Barim. The mitzvah only applies if you have a garment that has four corners. If it only has three corners, it's not mitzvah. If it has five corners to it, that's a machlokes hatanoim, and the accepted opinion in the Gemara is that it is chayiv and tzitzis. The Gemara has a machlokes. The whole perek hatchelas, Idla Maseches Benachas, has all the dinim of tzitzis and chelas. The Gemara there has a machlokes amaroim regarding the mitzvah of tzitzis. The terminology used by the Gemara is it a chayvas gavra or is it a chayvas mona? Mana means a clean. Is it a chayvas habeged? Or is it not? Does the mitzvah of tzitzis apply? Let's say I buy a talis and I have it in the drawer. I'm not wearing the talis. I have it hanging on the wall. So is one obligated to put on tzitzis on a four-corner garment that he owns, that's in his possession? Chayvas mana, the beged is mechuyev. Or is one only obligated in tzitzis at the time that he wears the garment? The accepted opinion in the Gemara is that it's only a chayvas gagra. You're only obligated to put on tzitzis when you wear the tzitzis. If it's hanging on the wall, you're not obligated. The Karoi, it's famous, the Karoi used to have a talus hanging on the wall, and they felt like the other opinion, that it's a chayvas mana, but that's not accepted. What material does the garment have to be made from that it should be chayv and tzitzis? So the Gemara has a machlokes hatanaim. Some tanaim are of the opinion that min ha-Torah, one is only obligated to wear tzitzis on a beged that either tzemer or pishtim, either wool or linen. And if you wear cotton garments that have four corners, it's only chayv and tzitzis midirabban. The other opinion in tanaim is no, that it's labdavke tzemer or pishtim. Whatever material the garment is made of, it'll be chayv and tzitzis, unless it's made from leather. The Gemara says that if you have a beged shel or made from leather, it's not chayv and tzitzis. Why is leather different? If cotton and all other materials are chayv and tzitzis, one Tana says beged stam ha'amavat Torah. The word beged in the biblical meaning only refers to tzemer or pishtim, and all other meaning are the rabbanim. But if one should assume it's machlekes and shulchan aruch, had a paskin. Rabbi Yosef Kar paskins one way, and the Ramah, Rabbi Yosef Kar paskins only tzemer or pishtim is their raisa, and the Ramah paskins that all the meaning are their raisa. That's why a lot of people are mahada to wear dafke a woolen talis, as opposed to a silken talis, or a woolen arbekamfis, as opposed to a cotton arbekamfis, because if it's wool, then for sure you're fulfilling the mitzvah min haTorah. If it's cotton or if it's silk, then it's a machlokes hatanoim and a machlokes in Shulchan Aruch, whether the mitzvah is the rais or the rabban. It's still a mitzvah. Mitzvah rabban is also a mitzvah. But if you want to go out of your way to fulfill a mitzvah the rais, so that's why some are of the opinion you should be mahada davke to have a beged shel tzemer. So the Gemara says it's a machlokes hatanoim and a machlokes the mechaber and the ramo had a paskin, where the shar minim outside of tzemer pishtim is the rais or the rabban. Why, if all the mina machayv and tzitzis idem and atarma the rabban and manishtana or, why is it that if it's made from leather, it's not chayv and tzitzis? So the recent svarim explain, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and many others from the last generation explain, because you have to have a shesiv yer, you have to have a warp and a woof, you have to have whatever the material is made of, you have thread, and the thread is a crisscross. So that's called the beged. But or is one piece of or. So that's not chayiv in tzitzis. So sometimes you have synthetic materials that are also made like that. They take petroleum and they make nylon. So sometimes they make nylon thread and they take the thread and they make a woof and a woof. They make a shesi v'yerev to make it into a garment. They weave it. And sometimes they just take the petroleum and they make it into a synthetic material, a sheet of material like that. So if it's a sheet of synthetic material, then Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and all the others from that generation, from the last generation, all assume that it's the same as or, same as leather, that it's not chayv and tzitzis even mid the rabbanon. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein added on an original chiddush that was not the muskum 100%. The others did not agree with him. Rabbi Moshe thinks that since synthetic material, if you take petroleum and you make nylon out of it, so since if you wanted to, you could have made a sheet of material, even though you chose to make thread, and the thread is going to have a crisscross, there is going to have a warp and a woof. But since this kind of material, you could have made a sheet of material, so even if you made a shes of the Arab, also not chayiv and tzitzis. And Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank writes, not so. Tzvi Pesach Frank was the big Pesach in Yerushalayim. He thinks that it depends, that if you took nylon and you made thread, and then from the thread you made a shesavier. Then he thinks that nylon would be chayiv in tzitzis. And if you have synthetic material, you made a sheet of material, then it's dinoke, or it's not, and or is not chayiv even the rabban, or is not chayiv in tzitzis. Yeah. What material do the strings have to be made from? So the Gemara has the following din. It's quoted in Shulchan Aruch. Chutim shel tzemer or chutim shel pishton are acceptable in any type of a beged. If the chutim are made from cotton, or the strings are made from nylon, or the strings are made from silk, so that's only acceptable if the beged is made from that type of material. In other words, silk strings are acceptable if the garment is made from silk. But if I have, let's say, a cotton arba kampis, or I have a talus that's made from wool, I cannot use silk strings on that. Silk strings are only good on a silk beged, and cotton strings are only acceptable on a cotton beged. But chutim of tzemer, chutim of pishton can cover any beged. The Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Malbim. The Malbim is known to us for his commentaries on Tanakh. But the Malbim was considered the Gadol HaDor and Psak HaLochem during that generation. He was one of the Goyne HaDor. He originally wrote a Sefer on Aruch Chaim, at the beginning of Aruch Chaim, and he went to the Chasam Sefer for a Haskama on the Sefer, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes it a lot. The first 50 Simonim I saw in Shulchan Aruch, he always quotes from the Malbim. And then Epis disappeared. We don't have too much more from the Malbim. So here, the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Malbim. Let's say I have a silk garment and I don't have enough woolen strings, or I don't have enough silk strings. So I want to put in three in one. In one corner, I want to put in three silk strings and one woolen string. I have three woolen strings and one silk string. So the Malbim has a chiddush. He thinks that that's not acceptable. It has to be two and two. Why? Because the Torah has a din that you have to have the mitzvah b'shleimusa of tzitzis, that is that you have tcheles and lavan. You have to have two parts to it. So not tzitzis hakana psil tcheles. So what does that mean, psil tcheles? It sounds like one string. So that's a big machlekes harishonim. How many strings? There's a machlekes hatanaim. How many strings are you supposed to have in each corner? That's a machlekes b'sham and b'silo. So we follow Bishamai, I think. That's one of the cases where we follow Bishamai, that you have four long strings, and you fold them over, and you make them into eight, and you tie it together. So how many of the four long strings have to be trailers? That's unclear in the Gemara. So the Ravid's opinion is that one whole string out of the four has to be trailers, and three have to be lovan. The Rambam's opinion is that a half a string has to be trailers. Means one of the eight strings is going to be trailers, and you can't dye it after it's already made into a string. After you made it into a string, then you're going to dip half of the string into the dye, so the dye is only going to affect the outside of the string. It's not going to dye the inside of the string. So it's quite a job. You have to dye raw material. You have to dye wool. The trellis has to be dafka wool. Trellis has to be a specific color. It has to be a specific material. The lavan, we just said, can either be tzemer or pishtim, or if the beged is silk, so the strings can be silk. And if the beged is cotton, so the strings can be cotton, and so on. But the trellis, the Gemara learns that from Psukim, the trellis is a specific color, and it's a specific material. The material has to be wool. So the wool has to be dyed before you make it into string. Because if you're going to twine it, you're going to make it into string, then you're going to dip it in a vat of dye, so the dye is only going to affect the outside of the string. The inside is going to be white. So it's quite a trick. Those who follow the Rambam, there are many who follow the Rambam, so they have to dye wool, chalas, and then they have to make a string, half of the string should use one kind of wool, that's dyed blue, and the other half of the string should not be dyed. And it's going to be approximately half and half. It's a sloppy job. So according to the Rambam, what does it mean when osnot tzitzis sakana psil chalas? One of the eight strings, now there was a half of one of the long strings, is going to be blue. According to the Ravid, one long string, one out of the four long strings is going to be blue. And Rashi and Tosfos in Perek HaTcheles and Menachos are of the opinion that it's half and half, two and two. Two blue strings and two white strings. In Shulchan Aruch, they don't quote all of these three opinions because it's already many years since the days of the Gaonim. Somehow in the days of the Gaonim, the Tcheles disappeared. The Gemara says that the Tcheles for tzitzis has to come from the chalazon, from a special sea animal that's apparently available in the Mediterranean. So for some reason or another, in the days of the Tanoim, in the days of the Amoraim, they had tchelis. In the days of the Goanim, they also had tchelis. Somehow after the days of the Goanim, the tchelis disappeared, and for many years people didn't know what the chalazon is. So in Shulchan Aruch, they don't give you too many dinim about tchelis, but it does, in Shulchan Aruch, the only opinion that's accepted from the three, how many have to be tchelis, is that it's two and two. The opinion of Rashi and Tosfos has been accepted that it's two and two with respect to what? So the Gemara has a din of gardume. Gardume means if you originally made, the tzitzis have to have a minimum length. If it's too short, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. So the Gemara has, by us, it's always more than, it's longer than it has to be. It's long enough. So the Gemara has a din. What if I tied the tzitzis and they had the correct length and then some of the strings tore afterwards? So the Gemara says that's called gardume tchelis, gardume tzitzis. They call the whole tzitzis tchelis because it has to have tchelis. So the Gemara says gardume tchelis is acceptable. So the Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Rabbeinu Tam's opinion that the tzitzis is supposed to consist of two parts, two tchelis and two lavan, and you have to have two strings should be shlemos. Two strings, two of the long strings have to be have the correct shear. And then, if the other two got torn and they're not the full length that they were supposed to be lechatchila, so since originally it was made behechsher and now two of them ripped, so it'll be acceptable. So that's the only opinion that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that it should be two and two. So that's what the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the Malbim. He thinks also two and two. So he says if you have, let's say, a silk garment and you can use silk strings and you don't have enough silk strings for one, let's say you have silk strings for all the corners and one corner you only have one silk string, you want to use one silk string and three woolen strings. So the Malbim thinks that that's not acceptable. He thinks that it has to go in units, two and two, so you can have two wool and two silk, but you can't have three and one. That's the Malbim. The name of the Sefer is Artes HaChaim. The Mishnah Berurah quotes it very often, the beginning of Shulchan Aruch. What's the story with the tchelis? So the Gemara says, tchelis daim al hayam. The tchelis has to come from the chalazon, which is a sea animal. So the chalazon, the dye is going to be similar in color to the color of the Mediterranean, daim al hayam. The yam is daim al rakia. Rakia is daim al kisei hakovet. So when we look at the tzitzis, we'll remember the rakia, we'll remember the kisei hakovet, and we'll remember that we have to observe all of the mitzvahs. Yeah. What color blue is it supposed to be? The color of blue, the color of the sky. The color of the sky when? So that's a big machlekes. Rashi and Chumash in the end of Parsha Shlach writes that it's the color of the sky at midnight. Because the word tchelis means tichlo, death. And it represents death to the Mitzrayim, that Makas Becharis occurred in the middle of the night, exactly midnight. Leil Yitzias Mitzrayim. The color of the sky in the middle of the night is very dark blue. It looks almost black. And the Rambam writes, not so. The Rambam writes that it should be the color of the sky in the afternoon, a lighter blue. So that's a major machlekes between Rashi and the Rambam. It's the same dye. Whenever you get the tchelis, it's the same dye. The other question is, do you dilute it with a lot of water, so it'll be light blue, or you dilute it with a little bit of water, so it'll be dark blue, the color of the sky in the middle of the night. So that's a major question. The Gemara in the second parak in Chagiga establishes, based on Psukim in Tanakh, the Gemara collects a lot of Psukim in Tanakh, Gemara establishes that there are seven heavens. That's the expression in English. The person is so happy, he says he's in seventh heaven. Seventh heaven is the highest you can go. The Gemara establishes, based on Psukim in Tanakh, that each heaven has a different name. When people get married and they recite the Sheva Brachas at the meal, so they say, Baruch Elokeinu Shehasimcha Bima'ono Ma'on, is one of the seven heavens. It's not the seventh heaven. It's not the seventh heaven. I think it's the fifth heaven, going from the bottom up. So why don't we say Shasimcha, the Simcha should be in the seventh heaven? It's a good question. It's probably a good answer. There is a good answer. Okay. So the Gemara says there are seven heavens. In order to have seven heavens, you have to have Avir Mapsik in between. So you have to have six Avirim. If you have no Avir Mapsik, so all the seven heavens are one heaven. So the Gemara says, if you add together the six Avirim that are Mapsik and the seven heavens, seven and six is 13. So therefore, So the Gemara says, therefore, when you're winding around the krichos, the Gemara understands when the word psil trelas, psil means to wind around. Like, naftul elikim niftalti im achosi. So Rashi says, naftuli means to wrestle, to wind around, to be shorish pora rosh velana, wrong pasuk. Where is it? Rashi quotes psukim in chumash that the word psil means to be tzedreit, to be wound around. So psil chelis means supposed to use the string of chelis to wind it around the other string. How many times are you supposed to wind it around? So the Gemara says minimum of 7, maximum of 13. Because when the main Tosis and the Rambam both write, the main din of winding around 7, 13 is when you have chelis. So the chelis is Dama l'Rakia, and there are 7 heavens. And in order to have 7 heavens, you have to have 6 avirim, mafzik in between the 7 heavens, otherwise it would be 1 heaven. So 7 and 6 is 13. So the Gemara says, when you have chelis, you should see to it that you should have a minimum of 7 and a maximum of 13. So what does that mean? A minimum of 7 and a maximum of 13? What? 7 what? So Tosis has 2 pshatim on that Gemara. So one pshat in the Gemara is, how do we have chelis now? How do normal people have chelis? You have 4 units. You have 7, 8, 11, 13. So we usually assume the 7 is the minimum and the 13 is the maximum. So you have, and then you have in the middle, you have 7, 8, 11, 13. Why do we do 7, 8, 11, 13? So 7 and 8 is Yud K, is 15. And Vav K is 11. And then 13 is Echad. So the 7, 8, 11, 13 represents the Gematria Hashem Echad. So Machrayim raised the question, how you light untied tzitzis in the Chikas Hashem? So the answer, it's only a Gematria. Okay. It's not a violation of Mechikas Hashem, but it's a humorous, interesting kash. So the common practice that we have 7, 8, 11, 13, we have 4 chulios. That's called the chulia. In between one knot and the other is called the chulia. And in the first chulia we have 7 krichas, and the fourth chulia we have 13. So we have a minimum of 7 and a maximum of 13 chulias in any given kricha. So that's one opinion in Tosfos. That's what it means. The other opinion in Tosfos is no. The Gemara says on the previous daf, how many krichas do you have to have in any given chulia in any unit? 3. The Gemara says if you have less than 3, it's not called a chulia. You have to have 3 krichas. 7, 8, 11, 13 is the minimum and maximum number of how many chulias you should have. Instead of making 4, we make 4 chulias now. Instead of making 4 chulias, so today, that's what Tosfos and the Rambam both say, if you don't have chelis anyway, so the whole 7, 8, 11, 13, 7 or 13 is irrelevant. The whole idea of 7 rikiyim is relevant when it's chelis dama l'rakia, so you want to have 7, there are 7 rikiyim, so you want to have 7, you want to have 13 because of the rikiyim and the avir. Mm-hmm. If you only have lovin, so it doesn't matter anyway. But if you really have chelis, those people are putting on chelis, so they should really have 7 chulias. And each chulia should have a minimum of 3 krichas. If you want to satisfy both opinions, then you should have a minimum of 7 chulias, 7 units, and then you should have a minimum of 7 krichas in each chulias. You're going to have 7 times 7 is going to be 49. Got to have a very long string. Every time you wind around, you use a part of the string. There's no halacha that you have to always use the same string. Let's say those people who have trailers. So some of them have 2 long strings of blue and 2 long strings of white. So you don't always have to use the same string. Got to use the same string, it's going to disappear. You keep on winding around, it's going to get so short. So you keep on switching. So when you start winding around with the blue, so whichever blue is longest, so you use that to wind around. And the next time, if they make you double knot, the next time a different one is going to be longest. Whichever one is longest, so you use that to do the krichas. So if someone wants to satisfy, if someone has trailers and wants to satisfy both of the opinions in the Tosfos, so the way to do it is not easy. The way to do it is that you have to have 7 chulios, and each chulia should have 7 krichas in it. The Gemara has a machlokes hatanoim, whether trailers me'akevus is halavan or not. So the generally accepted opinion is that they're not me'akim ze'ezeh. Let's say I have all the 4 strings are trelis or all the 4 strings are lovan. So that's a machlokes Rebbe and a Chachamim. Rebbe's opinion is that trelis makevis is a lovan, lovan makevis are trelis. You have to have both trelis and lovan. And if you don't have both, you're not yotze the mitzvah. The Baal HaMo'or wrote a Hasogis on the Rif. Baal HaMor was a teenager. He writes he was 19 years old. And the Rif was the accepted Pesach in the generation. That was the Sefer Psak. That was before the days of the Shulchan Aruch. So the Rif was considered the major Sefer Psak. So the Baal HaMor writes in his introduction to his comments on the Rif that it's a little chutzpahdik that he's only a pisher, age 19, and he's writing Hasogas on the major Pesach of the generation. But he said, what can he do? He's learning, and he thinks that he has some comments to say. So he disagrees with the Rif here and there, the Sefer HaMor. He lived in Lunel, which is a city in Provence. Lunel means the moon. So the name of the Sefer is HaMor HaKotam. When it comes to Nezikin, so then he says, you can't succeed in Nezikin just with the moonlight. You have to have the sunlight. So he calls the name of the Sefer HaMor HaGodol. On Nezikin, starting from Baba Kamba, it becomes HaMor HaGodol, the sun. And on the beginning of Shas, it's the HaMor HaKotam because he lived in Lunel, Al Shem Iro. He called it HaMor HaKotam, the moon. So the Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi, the author of the Sefer HaMor, printed on the bottom of the Rif, writes in Perek Bama Mavlikin, in Masech HaShabbos, the Gemara says that one of the Tanoim used to prepare for Shabbos, used to take a bath on Erev Shabbos, and he used to get dressed up, big the Shabbos, and he would wear tzitzis, he would wear tchelas. So the Baal HaMor comments on that Gemara. The Gemara is not saying any dinim there. The Baal HaMor just comments on the Gemara that you should know that he thinks the din is like Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, Rabbi's opinion, tchelas makevis es halovan. And the Ramban writes, the Ramban always writes the Sefer Mohammed Hashem to defend the Rif from the Hasogas of the Baal HaMor. So the Ramban writes, V'kibalnu edusa, we heard about the Rabbi Mizrahi Halevi, that he never wore tzitzis. According to his opinion, you it'll be a bracha levatol, you're not yotze anything. Unless you have chelis and love, and you're not yotze any mitzvah at all. So he heard that the Baal HaMor never wore any tzitzis during his whole lifetime, because he holds a dinners like Rebbe, the Ma'akvin says it. The generally accepted opinion is not like the Sefer HaMor. The overwhelming majority of the Rishonim and the Goanim Paskin, like the Chachamim, the Rebbe, that Tcheles ain't a ma'akev es ha'lovan, and lovan ain't a ma'akev es ha'tcheles. Yeah, how did they know? How did the Tanoim know that Tcheles ain't a ma'akev es ha'lovan, lovan ain't a ma'akev es ha'tcheles? So there is a Sefer HaChumash written by the Dayan in Vilna, who was at the time of the Vilna Goan. Vilna Gaon was not officially a Rav in Vilna, he was a private citizen. So the Dayan in Vilna wrote a Sefer HaChumash, which the Torah Tmima borrowed a lot from, putting it mildly, borrowed a lot from. He writes in his introduction, he's going to use that, but he used it lock, stock, and barrel, he used the whole thing. So in this Sefer HaChumash, he gives a suggestion that maybe since the Pasuk says, and us not tzitzis kind of. How does it say? It says in Doi Rai Sam. I forgot already how it says in Kriya Shema. Throughout all the future generations. And since it says in Doi Rai Sam, maybe that has the connotation of that Tcheles Einem Akevis Asalov. And even if you live in a generation where you don't have any Tcheles, the Tcheles is not Miakev. There's still a mitzvah to put on tzitz. Where did you get such an idea? Where did the Dayan get such an idea that the word the Doi Rai Sam should imply, even if you live in a generation where you don't have tcheles? Because the Gemara says that in today's parsha, in the end of Parsha's Mishpatim, the Torah records that on the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, there was the gerus of Klal Yisrael. All of Klal Yisrael had to undergo gerus. We are all Jewish today. Those who are descendants from those who stood, I don't know if I'm a descendant. A Kohen Levi knows he's a descendant from a Kohen Levi. I'm not a Kohen, not a Levi. Could be I'm a descendant from gerus. I have no idea who my ancestors are. So those who know that they're descendants from Jews who stood at Har Sinai are Jewish because their parents converted, because their ancestors converted. At Har Sinai, all the Jewish people underwent Geiris, and that's how they all became Jewish. So the Gemara establishes all the laws of Geiris are based on what happened on the occasion of Maimon HaSinai, that all the men underwent Bris Milah 7 weeks earlier before Yetzias Mitzrayim. It says in Chumash that before eating the Korban Pesach, everybody had to have a Bris Milah. Then in the Chumash, it doesn't really say explicitly, it says that the married people had to go to mikveh, but the Gemara reads it in between the lines that even the single people had to go to mikveh. Married people had to go to mikveh and not to be with their wives 3 days before. And the single people all had to go to mikveh before Maimon HaSinai, because a ger habolah, his guy, has to go to mikveh. And they all had kabbalas on mitzvahs, they all screamed out Nasim and Ishma, that's at the end of Parshas Mishpatim. And then, also at the end of Parshas Mishpatim, it says that they brought special karbanas. So the Gemara derives from that parsha that Ager HaMizgayer, Ager HaBola HizGayer, has to bring a karban. He has to have kabbalas on mitzvahs, he has to have milo, tefillah, and he has to bring a korban. So is it possible to accept a ger bizman hazeh? There's no beis hamikdash, so the ger is unable to bring korban. So the Gemara says yes. The Gemara increases says yes, because the pasuk says b'chayogir itchem ger l'dor roseichem. If a ger will convert in any generation, so the implication is even in a generation when there's no beis hamikdash. That's how the Gemara establishes that the korban is not miyakeh bizman hazeh, because the pasuk says. That's increases daf tesam and aleph. So that's what the Vilna Dayan thought. The same over here. But since it says Rasulan since al kafir v'gdeim v'doy roy som, if you wear tzitzis throughout all of future generations, that it means even if you live in a generation where there is no tchelis, where the chalazon got lost. Yeah. One can argue the point. It's not exactly the same because in the chumash, it speaks about a generation when the Beis Hamikdash will be destroyed. It says v'hashemosi es mikdashechem. I will, in the Teichachet, it says, in the Chukaisai, it says, HaKadosh Baruch is going to punish the Jewish people, and he will cause the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. So the Chumash speaks about a generation where there is no Beis HaMikdash. So when the other pasuk says, if a non-Jew will convert in any generation, it means even a generation that's alluded to in the Chumash and the Chukaisai, a generation when there's no Beis HaMikdash. The Chumash never speaks about a generation where there's no Tchelos. We know there were many years that there was no tchelos, but the Chumash doesn't mention that. So maybe by the tzitzis, when it says Vasalan tzitzis, the kafir v'gdeim, the dor rosam throughout all the generations, maybe it means generations where there is tchelos. It never says in the Chumash. We know that there were many generations where there was no tchelos, but it could be that the only time there is such a drasha that the word of the Rosechem has the connotation of throughout all the generations, even if something is missing. Maybe that only applies by the missing Beis HaMikdash, because the Chumash refers to such a generation. It never refers to a generation where the Tchelis is missing. Yeah. How come the Tchelis Taka is missing? How could HaKadosh Baruch Hu allow such a terrible tragedy to occur to the Jewish people, that a mitzvah that we fulfill every day, the mitzvah of tzitzis, either according to Rabbi Mizrahi HaLevi, who paskens like Rebbe, the whole mitzvah is lost, Or according to the Chachamim, that the Tchelis is not Miyakeves, that the mitzvah shalom b'shleim Musa, the mitzvah b'shleim Musa is to have Tchelis b'dlovan, and now we're only able to fulfill the mitzvah shalom b'shleim Musa. Isn't this a terrible tragedy? So the Arizal has a comment, a historical comment. He thinks the tragedy is not so, not such a major disaster. The Ikem mitzvah of tzitzis is only b'zman she b'es hamikdash hayakar. B'zman she b'es hamikdash kayam, it's not that significant. He doesn't mean to say that he says the Ika mitzvah of Tchelis is only Bizman Shah Beis HaMikdash HaYakayim. Why in the world should that be so? What does tzitzis have to do with Bizman Shah Beis HaMikdash HaYakayim? Very unclear. So the previous Satmar Rebbe was known for his many things, known for his anti-Zionistic position, and known for his wit and his humor. And is known for his learning. He was a different style, a Hungarian style, a big tamachot. So he quoted a Gemara in the end of Brachas. The Gemara in the end of Brachas says, there's no bracha when it snows. Okay, but when you see breathtaking mountains, when you see the Alps, there's a special bracha. When you see an ocean, when you see the Mediterranean, when you see Grand Canyon, there are special brachas to be recited when you see the wonders of nature. So the Gemara says, when you see a clear sky, the clear blue sky, you have to recite a bracha. Then the Gemara says, but that was only Bizman Shah Beis HaMikdash HaYakayim, the sky is clear and blue. After the Churban Beis HaMikdash, the sky is no longer the correct color of blue, so we no longer say that bracha. Haraya Rakia B'Taharasa. It's the Gemara in the end of Masechet Brachos. So that's what the Satmar Rebbe said, that's what the Arizal was referring to. The Arizal himself doesn't explain, I don't think he explains it. He's interpreting, that's what he's saying. That the main mitzvah of Tchelis only applies, Tchelis is supposed to be Daimel Rakia. Which Rakia is supposed to have the color of the real Rakia? And the real blue, beautiful color of the sky was only Bizman Shah Beis HaMikdash HaYakayim. After the Churban Beis HaMikdash, it's no longer that color of blue. Did they wear Tchelis after the destruction of Beis HaMikdash? Of course they did. All the Tanoim and all the Amoraim, the Gemara is full of it. They all lived after the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. All wore Tchelis. But the Arizal said that he thinks that it wasn't such a major disaster that the chalazon was lost. We didn't know what it was. We couldn't identify it. For so many generations, not such a major disaster, because the Ikem mitzvah of Tchelis on the Mizban Shah Beis HaMikdash HaYakayim. But the Arizal didn't say a din that Bisban Shein Beis Megdish Kaim, you don't wear tchelas. That's against the Gemara. The Gemara said the famous, the Tanoim and Amaroim and the Gaonim, they all wore tchelas. Everybody wore tchelas. So that's why in recent years there was the Ratzina Rebbe, is known as the Bala Tchelas, Rab Gershon Henach Leiner. He was a Chassidish Rebbe at the end of the 1800s. Radzina is a city, a little village in Poland. He's known for he wrote the Talmud Bavli on Seder Taharos. He authored the Talmud Bavli on Seder Taharos. What he did was he took all the Gemaras all over Shas. Whenever a Mishnah and Taharos is discussed, he collected all the Gemaras and he put it in the order of the Mishnayos and Taharos. It looks like a Gemara. So the many Gedolim were upset during his generation. He printed as if it's a Gemara. So they said it should say on top of every page, this is Seder Taharos. This is a safer Seder Taharos. And no one should think that it's real Gemara. Okay. So in the second printing, he printed on top of every page, Seder Taharos. Safer Seder Taharos. Everybody sees that it's not Talmud Bavli. But basically it is Talmud Bavli. So he's known, he was a big Talmud Chacham. His interest was to hasten taste and the coming of Mashiach, we have to show the Rabbanu Shalom that we're preparing for the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohanim and the Beis HaMikdash have to wear special uniforms in order to be makariv the Karbonis. And some of the uniforms, some of the big de kuhuna, require trelas. So if we're not going to have the trelas, so we won't be able to, even if we build the Beis HaMikdash overnight, we won't be able to be makariv Karbonis because the Kohanim have to wear big de kuhuna. And the Pashto says that even though we pass in Tchelis, it's not Me'akevis and Salov, and by Tzitzis, that's only by Tzitzis, but by Big Dekuna, the Pashto says that Tosefta says that Tchelis is Me'akevis. If you're going to make Big Dekuna, you're not going to put in the Tchelis, they're not kosher for Big Dekuna. So his interest really, he was really interested in hastening the coming of Mashiach, and preparing for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, and preparing for the Karbonis. So he decided he's going to go try to discover what is the Chalozin? What could the Chalozin possibly be? So he heard that in Italy there was a big aquarium that had every sea animal. So he decided he's going to go travel to Italy and he's going to look at all the fish, see all the candidates, and decide which one could it possibly be. It has to be something in the Mediterranean. The Gemara says that this Chalozin is some kind of a fish that's a Mediterranean. It has to be has to have a color blue. So he went to the aquarium in Italy and he decided that it's the squid fish. Because the squid spits out the black stuff. He decided that that's it. So then he took some wool and he took the stuff that the squid fish spits out. And he tried to dye the wool, the raw wool, in the dye. So he waited till it dried out. And then he washed it. And every time it washed out, the dye didn't hold. And the Gemara says that trelis, the color of trelis, you can identify that as trelis, that it doesn't wash out. So obviously there's something wrong over here. So he put an advertisement in the Italian newspaper that he's willing to pay a chemist who will help him. He has a problem. So a non-Jewish chemist volunteered for money, he'll help him, why not? So he explained to him what the problem is. He wants this colored blue dye in the wool. And every time he dyes it, it has to be from this fish, this squid fish. And every time he dips it in the dye, it doesn't take, it washes out. So he needs a chemical that will cause the dye to remain in the wool. So the chemist said, no problem. And he gave him a chemical. Sure. So he was very happy. So they made a factory in Radzin. And they were taking the squid fish and they were taking the dye with the chemical that the non-Jewish Italian chemist gave the Rebbe, and they were making this trelis. Rabbi Herzog was originally a rabbi before he was appointed chief rabbi in Eretz Yisrael. He was the second chief rabbi. Rabbi Cook was the first chief rabbi, a Kohen, and Rabbi Herzog was a Levi. He was the second chief rabbi, and after him was Rabbi Unterman, Kohen, Levi, Yisrael. He was the third. So Rabbi Herzog, in his first life, was a rabbi in Ireland. His son Yaakov Herzog wrote in his autobiography how his parents met, that the grandfather, Rabbi Hillman, was a dayan in London, and there was a problem one year before Pesach. There wasn't enough grain to make a lot of matzahs. and the people were going to be starving on Pesach. Now they have kosher le Pesach bagels and kosher le Pesach spaghetti. They have everything kosher le Pesach. But then there was hardly anything to eat. So in Europe, the tradition always used to be whenever there's a shnas batzoris, whenever there's not enough food to go around, so the rabbanim get together and they allow the balabatim to eat kidneys that year. So Rabbi Hillman called a meeting of all the rabbanim in England and in Ireland. They should all gather together and to discuss the possible permissibility of allowing everyone to have kidneys that year for Pesach. So when all the rabbanim were there, Rabbi Herzog was a bacher. He was a single rabbi from Ireland. He came too. And then Rabbi Hillman had his daughter, had his daughter give everybody tea. So when she saw this young single guy, she fell in love. It was love at first sight. And when she was pouring the tea, she was looking at him, and she poured the hot water on his trousers, and she burnt his leg. And for him, it was also love at first sight. So they fell in love, and they married. They got married. Anyway, so Rabbi Herzog was initially a single rabbi in Ireland. And he went to university, and he got a graduate degree, and he wrote for his dissertation, he wrote on chelas. He wrote on chelas. So he was researching the whole topic. So he corresponded, it was before the Second World War, before the factory in Radzin was destroyed by the Nazis. And the one around the factory was killed by the Nazis. Everybody was killed. So before the war, years before the war, Rabbi Herzog corresponded with the Balabos who ran the factory in Radzin, and he's the only living person after the war who knew how they used to make the trellis there. So he writes in his dissertation, originally it was written in English as a doctoral dissertation, now it's available in Hebrew in translation. So he wrote that the Italian chemist fooled the Rebbe, that he gave him crush, he gave the chemical that he gave him was not a chemical that causes the dye to hold in the wool. He gave him Prussian blue. So the dye that you have, the Radzina Rebbe dyed the wool with the squidfish stuff. And then they put in the Prussian blue. And then when they washed it out, so all of the color from the squidfish went down the drain, it all went out. And the only thing that was left behind was the color of the chemical. So Rabbi Herzog said the whole thing was a fake. That's not acceptable. If you have the same color blue, but it's from some synthetic an artificial source, it's from a chemical, it doesn't come from the fish, so it's not acceptable. So it's interesting, after the Second World War, the factory was destroyed, and the people who used to run the factory were all killed by the Nazis, so the Radzina Hasidim in Eretz Yisrael wanted to build the factory again, to continue to make chela. So the only living person in the whole wide world who knew how they made it was Rabbi Herzog, so they relied on him, but he said at the same time that the whole thing was a mistake, that the chemist had fooled the Rebbe, so that they didn't accept from him. So they continued to make, they have the factory in Eretz Yisrael, they make the trellis the same way that they used to make it before. So Rabbi Herzog disagreed with everything. He said the word chalozon in Talmudic Hebrew means a snail, it doesn't mean a fish. The word chalozon is a technical term that means a shelled animal. Has to be a shelled animal in the Mediterranean that they would use somehow for dyeing blue. So if you look in the history books, there was only one. That's the shellfish that they have. So first Rabbi Herzog identifies the chalozon as this shellfish. And then he didn't do the experimenting himself. He corresponded with some curator of some museum in Paris about dyeing wool with the fluid that comes from this shellfish. So the curator in the museum in Paris said that he says he tried it and it's going to wash out. The dye is going to wash out, it's not going to last. It happens that it's absolutely not true. The dye from that fish, the dye from that snail does not wash out. It's a lasting color blue. But because the fellow from Paris, the guy from Paris Museum, said that it's going to wash out, so Rabbi Herzog shifted to decide that it must be a different shellfish, not the one that most use. But the dye from that shellfish doesn't make blue, it makes purple. And purple is argaman. So chelas and argaman are the same thing. So he came up the last couple pages in his dissertation, the last five pages, and he says, yeah, chelas and argaman, they're both purple, it's from this kind of a fish, from that kind of a thing, a shver. So now they have three different kinds of trellis that are available in Eretz Yisrael. the Radzina Hasidim still continued the old way, the way the Rebbe did, which Rav Herzog said, the Goyish chemist fooled the Rebbe. And most people who wear cheles today use the initial suggestion that Rabbi Herzog made, that it's one shellfish. Because what the curator from the museum in Paris wrote him is just not true. It does not wash out. And then there's some Professor Zeideman, I don't know if he's still alive, he was insisting, no, we want to follow Chief Rabbi Herzog. Rabbi Herzog, the last five pages in the dissertation, says that cheles comes from a different shellfish, a different shell animal, and the color is going to be purple. So he has a light purple color for tcheles. The Pashtus says that it's not supposed to be purple. It's like Rav Herzog said in the middle, because the Gemara says in the days of the Tanoim and the Amaroim, there were fakers who would be selling imitation tcheles that was known as Kilo Ilon, Kuf Lamed Aleph Kilo Ilon. So and that was not acceptable for the mitzvah of tcheles. Kleilam was from a vegetable, and the Gemara says it has to be davka. Tchelis for the tzitzis has to be davka from this sea animal, from the Mediterranean. So the color has to be the same. If kleilam is one color and tchelis is a different color, so how can they fool the public into believing that this is tchelis? So what is kleilam? What color is kleilam? So we have a dictionary. Now we have Jastrow. What was the original dictionary for the Gemara? So you have the Aruch, Rashi and Tosfos quote from the Aruch. The Aruch writes that Kloilon is indigo. Indigo, we know what color it is. It's blue. Indigo is blue. It comes from a vegetable. So Tchelis has to be blue also. If Tchelis is purple and indigo is blue, so how can they fool the public into buying a Kloilon, thinking that it's Tchelis? So that's why we don't accept, the most do not accept this Professor Zeideman's insistence that we should follow the last five pages of Rabbi Herzog's dissertation, because it just doesn't make any sense. It can't be purple. How can it be purple? It's supposed to be the same color as indigo, which is clearly blue. Color of the sky. The sky is blue. The ocean is blue. It's not purple. Shaila is, if you have already trellis, if you're going to put in, if trellis is available, it's not really right to put in tzitzis without trellis. So you're only fulfilling a mitzvah shelo b'shlei musa. The Mishnah Brura writes in one place in Hilchas Tzitzis that if you have tcheles available, you put in lovin without tcheles, you're in violation of baltigra. Let's say a person has tefillin and he only puts in three parshios. A person only puts tzitzis on three corners of the beged and he doesn't put on the fourth corner. Is that a violation of baltigra? So in the Shalas Shuvas Beis Halevi, there's a famous piece based on a Rashba and Maseches Rosh Hashanah. That's not a violation of baltigra. It's not kosher. If you have a tefillin that only has three parshios, you have a talis that only has tzitzis in three corners, you're just not yet to the mitzvah. The only time there's a din of baltigra is, the Mishnah Zvachim has an example. You have a korban chatos that's supposed to have zrikas on the four corners of the mizbeach. Or you have a korban olah that's supposed to have zrikas on two opposite corners of the mizbeach. Shtaim shehin arba. So instead of doing four, instead of doing two, you do one zrikas. So b'dieved we pask and the korban is kosher. But you had an opportunity to fulfill a mitzvah b'shlei musa, and you chose not to. You only fulfilled the mitzvah shelo b'shlei musa. So that's when you were in violation of baltigri. You did a mitzvah b'giro. You were yotzei in the mitzvah, but you did a mitzvah b'giro. The Mishnah Brura writes that this is also along the same lines of baltigra. If you don't have tcheles available, so you're not in violation of baltigra. You don't have an option of putting in tcheles. Let's say you have a carbon chatas, and there's only enough dam to be zorek on one corner. So there's no violation of Baltigra, but if you had enough dam to do all the four zrikas and you didn't bother to do it, that's the Mishnah's example of Baltigra. So the same over here, if you have tcheles available and you don't use it, it's worse than not wearing tzitzis at all. It's better not to wear any tzitzis at all. So you're not mechuyev in tzitzis. The obligation only is if a person wears a four-corner garment, then he's obligated to put on tzitzis. If he doesn't wear a four-corner garment, he's not obligated to put on tzitzis. So the question is, let's say you have the tcheles. How many strings should you make tcheles? So there were three opinions. The Rambam's opinion is 1 out of 8. The Raiva's opinion 1 out of 4. And the opinion that's quoted, the only opinion that's quoted in Shulchan Aruch is the Rashi and Tosfos 2 and 2. So the Pashtus is that, like the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Malbim, we follow the Shulchan Aruch, that it should be 2 and 2. For many centuries, we haven't been putting tcheles at all, but we've been following the dinim that are based on the assumption that it's supposed to be 2 and 2. Then, let's say you make chulias. How many chulias are you going to make? So we mentioned if you really have tchelus, so then there are two opinions in Tosfos how to read the Gemara. The more prominent opinion is that you have seven chulyas, seven units, and each unit has a double knot. That's the way the Ashkenazim always did, double knots in between each chulya. And then you can really make only three kriyas in each chulya. But the other opinion in Tosfos that we've been following for so many years is that the minimum of seven, maximum of 13 is how many kriyas in the chulya. That's why for so many years we made 7, 8, 11, 13. So if you want to satisfy both opinions, so you make 7, 7, 7, 7. You make seven units, each one having a double knot in between it. And then you have seven kriyas in each unit. Then the Gemara says you have to begin with white and you have to alternate. So that's the question. What do you mean you begin with white? So the different pshatim and the rishonim and gonim, they all have different sources in the rishonim. So one opinion is that you keep on alternating. You tie around the white string, then you tie blue string, and then you tie white string, blue string, you keep on alternating, white, blue, white, blue, white, blue. That's quite a job. It's annoying. Keep on switching. Others say, no, you only have to alternate. The first chulya should be white. The second chulya should be blue. Third chulya should be white. You alternate chulyas, not you alternate strings. The Rambam makes life easiest. The Rambam says the very first kricha is white. The very less kriyah and the less chulya is white, and everything else is blue. So that's not miyakev. All of this, the white with the blue with the winding around, that's not miyakev. How many strings? That is miyakev. That's crucial. In Shulchan Aruch, the only opinion that's quoted is that you have two and two. But as far as how you tie it around, they're the different opinions. We mentioned earlier the Gemara says that the tchelis has to be a specific color, has to come from a specific sea animal, a halazon, whatever that is supposed to mean, and it has to be a specific type of material. The string that's going to be dyed tchelas has to be wool. So what do you do if you have a linen garment and you're going to tie on a woolen string? It's going to become shatnas. So the Gemara says, correct, it will become shatnas. And the psukim say, nonetheless, you're obligated to put tchelas even in a baggage of pishton. And this pasuk is the source of the institution that mitzvah saseh is becha mitzvah loy saseh. If you have no way of fulfilling the mitzvah, the guy wants to wear a four-cornered garment that's made from linen, that's made from pishton, from linen. You don't tell him wear a different kind of garment. The person has a right to wear any garment he wants. There's not shatnas. He wears a four-cornered garment made of linen. So then the halacha requires that he must put in tzitzis, even though the tchelas is going to make it into shatnas, and that is the principle of esed dechaloy sesen. So the Gemara says there was a machlekes bishamai besilo, and this is one of the few cases where we paskin like besilo against bishamai. This is one of the rare cases where we paskin like bishamai against besilo. Bishamai made a gzera de rabbanon that you're not allowed to put tzitzis in a beged shel pishton, period. Because if you're going to put tzitzis in a beged shel pishton, then you're going to put in tchelas, you're going to put in the days of the Tanaim, they had tchelas, and they're going to be shatnas, and the head to shatnas is esei dechaloy sesei. So the Gemara says, but the esei dechaloy sesei is only if it's eepshel lekayim shneim. The only way to fulfill a mitzvah of tchelas is by having a string of semer that's dyed tchelas. So what are you going to do? You may fall in. You may have bought your tchelas from a faker who really sold you kloilon, which is puzzle. And you're not being yotze in the mitzvah of tchelas, so you're going to be putting in shatnas unnecessarily. You're going to be putting in a beged shel tzemer. You're going to be putting in a chut shel tzemer and a beged shel pishton. It's going to be shatnas, and the whole thing was unnecessary because your tchelas is not bona fide tchelas. The tchelas was really pasul of tchelas. It was kla'ilon. So because Bishamai was afraid of this gzera mishum kla'ilon, they had a lot of fakers in the days of the Tanaim who were selling imitation tchelas that was not acceptable. So that's why Bishama made Gzera de Rabbanan that you don't put tzitzis at all. You don't put tzitzis at all in a beged shel pishton. The Rosh originally lived in Germany. The Rosh was a Talmud of the Maharam Mirutenberg. Maharam Mirutenberg was put in prison by the Goyish government. He didn't violate any law. He was put in prison because they assumed that the Jewish community would give a fortune of money to ransom him. So he gave instructions that they should not ransom him. It's a Mishnah Gittin. You're not allowed to pay more than the going rate to ransom a Jew because you're just going to encourage the government to kidnap more people, to hold up the Jewish community and empty out all the money. Then he left instructions even after he dies you shouldn't ransom his dead body either. That they didn't follow. So he left instructions that they shouldn't ransom him. So he died in prison. It was a long time till one of the Jews paid money. So the Rosh, after the Maamar Ritmerg died in prison, the Rosh was afraid they're going to put him in prison. And they're going to hold him in prison also to hold up the Jewish community. So he ran away. He left Germany. He went to Spain. At that time, the Rajbo passed away. The Rajbo was a student of the Ramban. Ramban lived in Barcelona. So the Rajbo also lived in Barcelona. So the Rajbo passed away, so they appointed the Rosh. They appointed a Yekke who didn't speak a word of Spanish. They appointed him, he should be the rabbi in Barcelona. So first he had to become oriented, what's going on there? So he sees all of the Balabatim are wearing tzitzis, arbekampis, made from linen. So he asks, what's going on? The halacha is like the Beis Shammai. This is one of the cases, the Goyim say, this is one of the cases that we pass on like the Beis Shammai. That there's exerah the rabban, you're not allowed to put tzitzis in a begad shel pishtan because you may fall in, they may give you imitation tchelis, which is pasul, and there's no heter of eser tchelis, that's because it wasn't necessary, you're not being kind in the mitzvah of tchelis. So the Balabatim explained to the Rosh, no, the exerah doesn't apply, bisman is that. The exerah only applies when you have tchelis. We don't have any tchelis already many years, we don't have any tchelis for a few centuries. So since nobody has any tchelis, and the whole reason for the exerah doesn't apply, so the whole gzera doesn't apply. The whole thing falls off, and we are permitted to put on tzitzis on a beged shel pishtan. That's what they said. And the Rosh got all excited. He says he thinks that it's correct. So you have to understand why is it correct. That's what they discussed in Shulchan Aruch. Why is it correct? Normally we have a rule in the Gemara that a gzera de rabbanon that was instituted for a specific reason is binding, even if you live in a generation where the reason no longer applies. That's called davish of the minyan. If the rabbis voted, that's Dovjimin, the rabbis voted to introduce a gzera because of a certain concern. And the concern doesn't always apply. So that's why we say loyplug rabban. The rabbi's gzera is loyplug. It applies in all cases. It applies in all generations, even if the reason for the gzera doesn't apply in your generation. So that's the question. Why did the Rosh get so excited about the explanation that the Balabatim gave him? We should have said it's a davish in the minyan. Tzach min yirach alatir. Nobody ever repealed this rabbinic enactment. Should be binding even in a generation where you don't any longer have any access to any chelas. So there is a the Rosh somehow addresses that issue and he says we understand why and we don't understand how was he happy about the explanation the Balabatim gave. So there was a great Goyen who was a student of Rab Chaim Volozhiner. Chaim Volozhiner was the most outstanding student of the Vilna Goyen, and he founded the yeshiva in Volozhin. And one of the first group of students in Volozhin yeshiva was Rabbi Yankala Karlina. He was the Rabbi in Karlina, he was a misnagid. He was always fighting with the Karlina Hasidim, with the Stolen Hasidim. He was the misnagid Shei Rabbi in Karlina. And he wrote the Sefer Mishkan as Yankala. So in his Sefer, he has a whole essay, and it's true that he has a whole essay, where he explains what the Rosh is talking about. Whenever you have a Gzera de Rabbanon, which is Ba'akiras Dovim min HaTorah, the rabbis prohibit us from fulfilling a mitzvah. That's time they made a Gzera de Rabbanon. You're not allowed to write with your left hand on Shabbos, even though it's Kalach HaYad. You're not allowed to carry in a karmos. That's fine. They have a right to make such a Gzera. Here they're making a Gzera, telling you not to blow shofar from a Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos and not to bring a Korban Pesach if you converted a Ner Pesach and not to put in tzitzis in the Begin Shal Pishtam and Ator Yivamukhiv to put in tzitzis. So the Chachamim have authority to make a Gzera de Rabbanon even when it's Ba'akira's Dovim and Ator, even when they're telling you to violate a mitzvah in the Torah, still binding. So that's when the Mishkan is Yankov explains in the Rosh, that's only when the reason applies. Whenever the reason doesn't apply, that kind of Gzera is not going to be a Loi Plug Rabbanon. Whenever you live in a generation where the reason doesn't apply, then that gzeira falls apart. We have that from earlier sources. We have, for example, there's a Mishnah in the Megillah that says when the Kohanim duchen, so you're not permitted to look at their hands. So if the Kohanim have mumin, the part of Yadav Viraglov, if the Kohen has some distortion on his face, or he's missing a finger or something, so the Mishnah says he's not allowed to duchen. The Takana Rabban is not allowed to duchen. Because some of the people who are in the shul may start staring at his hands, staring at his face, or at his feet, And they're not allowed to look at the Kohen's hands when he duchens. So the main exerid Rabbanah, such a person is not allowed to duchen. So in the 1500s, Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in Eretz Yisrael in Tzfat. And he writes that during his lifetime, they started the new minhag that the Kohen cover the hands when they duchen. It's not universal. Chafetz Chaim lived in the 1800s, 1900s, when he wrote the Mishnah Brura, he lived in Poland, they didn't cover the hands. Kohen covered their faces and the hands were exposed. He writes in Lithuania, he didn't live in Lithuania, he lived in Poland. Radin is in Poland. He writes in Lithuania, the Kohen covered the hands. So in Sfat, the Beis Yosef writes, the Kohen had the minhag to cover the hands, so the tzibur can't see their hands unless they crawl under the talus. But they can't see the hands even if they stare, there's nothing to see. Rabbi Yosef Karo writes, he doesn't think the din in the Mishnah applies any longer. Even though there's a din in the Mishnah on the books that a Kohen has mumim, but part of Yad Barakim is not allowed to duchen, that din the Rabbanan no longer applies bisman hazeh. And that's what we're passing today. Even though the Kohen has mumim, but part of Yad Barakim, he still goes and he duchens because he can't see anything anyway. What are you afraid of? That the tzibur may stare at his hands. They can't see anything anyway. I have other cases like that as well. So that's what the Mishkan Asyankev writes over here, that he thinks that that's what the Rosh was driving at. The Rosh was all excited that the Balabatim were right in Spain, that since we no longer have the trailers and there's no concern that they may fall in and put shatness in a chut shel tzemer and a beggar shel pishton, thinking that it's trailers. We don't have that. We don't have any trailers. So since the reason for the Gzera doesn't apply, the whole Gzera does not apply. The Gemara says that when you take the wool and you make it into thread, that has to be done lishma, tviya. The tviya sachutim has to be done lishma. The Gemara never says whether the kshira, the tying of the strings onto the beged, does that also have to be done lishma? So here for the Rishonim say it's a kal v'chaymer. Tosfos says, of course it has to be. If even the tviya sachutim has to be done lishma, so certainly the kshira sachutim on the beged, of course, it has to be done lishma. The Rambam does not understand like that. The Rambam says, no, the only thing that requires a lishma is tviya sachutim, making the raw wool into string. But taking the string, tying it onto the beggar, does not have to be done lishma. The Gemara says, if a non-Jew ties on the chutim on a beggar, that's not acceptable. Why? Because it says, Amor b'nei Yisrael v'amata alehem, v'yosu lehem tzitzis. B'nei Yisrael v'yosu v'loyu m'sar lam v'yosu. The Pasuk says, only Jewish people should tie the tzitzis. If a non-Jew ties the tzitzis, it's no good. So the Rambam holds, if a non-Jew does anything, it's never considered lishma. So what did the Gemara need a pasuk to prove that if a non-Jew ties the tzitzis, it's not acceptable? It's not acceptable because it lacks lishma. So you see from the Gemara that you don't need lishma for kshira sachutim. And Tosfos gives a teretz. Tosfos says, no, you do need lishma. So because of this machlokes, we don't permit a katan. Whenever a child before bar mitzvah does anything, we say it's not considered lishma. Let's say you have to bake the shmura matzah lishma. So we wouldn't allow a child to help bake the matzahs. Sometimes children want to help, so they tell them that they should scream out, shem mitzvah matzah. That's their participation. or they should carry the water. But when you throw the water into the flour or you knead the dough, actually making the matzah, that has to be done by people who are bar mitzvah, because a child before bar mitzvah, al pi din is Allah badas, cannot create lishma. So that's two opinions in the Shulchan Aruch. Would it be acceptable if a child before bar mitzvah tied the tzitzis onto a garment that an adult is going to wear? If the child ties the tzitzis on his own beged, okay, that's for his own purposes. But if a child is going to tie the tzitzis on the garment, on the talism of the adults, so that's a machlekes in Shulchan Aruch, and they recommend that you should not permit that. Rabbi Natam is quoted by Tosfos and Gittin on Daf Memem Beis. Should have been in Menachos and Perek Chelos, but it's not there. It's only in Gittin, Daf Memem Beis. Rabbi Natam says that a woman is not obligated to wear tzitzis because it's a mitzvah saseh shas mangroma, because Laila is lav zman tzitzis. So therefore the Rabbi Natan says, since women are exempt from the mitzvah tzitzis, a woman cannot create lishma. Whoever is any b'toras, any given mitzvah, let's say the shmura matzah, have to be baked by Jews. You can't have non-Jews bake the matzah, because the non-Jews are not obligated to eat matzah, so therefore they're not able to create lishma. The mazal is that throughout many generations, the women always used to bake the matzah. So the mazal is that despite the fact that matzah is a mitzvah saseh shas mangrama, women should have been exempt. The Gemara learns that from a pasuk that this is an exception to the rule that women are chayiv matzah, even though it is as magrama. So women are yeshnam b'toras matzah, so they can create the shmoa matzah. But the Rabbi Tam says since women are exempt from the mitzvah of tzitzis, a woman cannot create the shmoa to tie the tzitzis onto the beggar. In Shulchan Aruch they have a din. Quoting, this din doesn't appear in the Gemara. This din comes from the Sifrei. On the end of Parsha Shlach, when the Torah has the din of tzitzis, so the Sifrei formulates aloha that the tzitzis, the chutia tzitzis, should be notefes ala keret. Usually, if you look around and people wear a talis, they see there's a hole in the corner, and then the strings hang down vertically. Strings hang down straight. Not supposed to be like that. Strings are supposed to first be horizontal, come out the side, and then hang down. If it hangs down, that's your yotze the mitzvah shelo b'shlei musa. The mitzvah b'shlei musa is that it should be no tefes ala keren. The strings should come out sideways and hang down. Usually, even if you have your tzitzis in the correct position, someone's going to pull them, or it's going to happen that it's going to pull down. So you should correct it. So that's a shaila. Is it permissible to correct the tzitzis on Shabbos? If you're wearing a talis and you see that the strings are hanging down straight, is that a violation of Misakin Mana? Misakin Mana. It's a little bit humorous, Misakin Mana. So the Shari Tshuva, next to the Beheitev, quotes a machlokes achronim about that. Some achronim say that this is a violation of Misakin Mana, even though the tzitzis is kosher the way it is, but since you want to have it more bishlei musa, so that's also considered misakin mana. Others assume that's not misakin mana. The only time it's misakin mana if you wouldn't be into the mitzvah at all. So then you're correcting him in order to be makshah the tzitzis, that's misakin mana. But if you're into the mitzvah b'di'evad, and by having it go sideways, it's going to be it's a mitzvah bishlei musa lahatchila. So we usually assume that that's not a violation of misakin mana. When you tie the tzitzis onto the beggar, we mentioned there are two opinions, the Machlokes Taisus and the Rambam, where they need asiyah lishma. So the Mishnah Berurah makes a whole fuss about this. Mishnah Berurah is always usually machmer and everything, so the Mishnah Berurah makes a whole fuss. There is a discussion in the Rishonim whether lishma, how does one accomplish lishma? Just by having machsheves lishma, he has a mind, but he's tying the tzitzis on the garment in order to make it into a kosher talis. Or do you need amira? Where does this machlekes come from? There is a din of machsheves pigul. If somebody brings a carbon and they intend to eat the basar chutz lizmanoi, after he's going to put it in the freezer and eat it next week, so that passels the whole carbon. Lo yechoshev lo. If you have machsheves pigul, so it passels. So what does it mean? Lo yechoshev. Machsheves pigul means machshove, or machsheves pigul means dibur. Maybe I should say machshove doesn't mean a thing, only if he said it. So Taisus in every other Masicht raises the issue. Taisus in Psachim, and Taisus in Zvachim, and Menaches, and in Gittin, the Rosh talks about a Shaila when you write a Get Lishma. So does Lishma mean the Sefer has to say, I'm writing this Get Lishma, Lishma Lishem Gerishim? Oh, no, you just should have it in mind at the time that he's writing. It's not necessary to say. So the Rosh writes that he thinks that the Shaila of Lishma depends on Shalom Lishma. When you have a machsheves pigul, does it mean dibur or does it mean machshove? So since that's a major machlekes harishayim, all the Balei HaTosfos had this machlekes, whether machsheves pigul means machshove or means a dibur, so this is relevant to machsheves lishma also. The Mishnah Berurah is machmer on this. He thinks that you should be very careful to make sure that when you tie the tzitzis onto the beged, you should say bepeh that you're tying the tzitzis on the shem mitzvah tzitzis. It's interesting, when the Mishnah Berurah was originally printed, so the people didn't know who this person was. Why should they rely on him? So he has Haskamas. In the beginning, it says his name on the Sefer, but he was an unknown figure. So he has Haskamas in the beginning of the Sefer from people who at that time were prominent rabbis. One of the people who gave Haskama was Rabbi Cook's father-in-law, the Aderis, Eliyahu David Rabinovich Toman. Aderis is a Rosh Yeshiva. He was the Rav in Panovich and the Rav in Mir. And then later he was appointed, he moved to Eretz Yisrael, he was appointed to be the Rabbi of Yerushalayim. The Rabbi of Yerushalayim was Rav Shmuel Salant, who was getting old, and he wanted an assistant rabbi to groom him to take over after he dies. So they invited the Aderis to come from Panovich. He was first the Rav in Mir, then in Panovich, and then he came to Eretz Yisrael. And then after a few years he died, and Shmuel Salant went on for another 15 years till the age of 100 or so. And he died at a very ripe old age. So that's how it says on the Matzeva of the Aderis. It says, Shenisman Alias Rabbi Yerushalayim. He never lived so long. Shenisman Alias Rabbi. He was appointed to take over the Rabbonis in Yerushalayim. So he also gave a Haskama. He was one of the prominent Rabbonim in Europe at that time. He also gave a Haskama to the Mishnah Brura. So one of the Rabbonim who gave a Haskama, one of the Rabbonim who was more prominent in the Chofetz Chaim at the time that the Mishnah Brura was printed, as in his Shailas HaTshuvas, B'nai Tzion, he makes fun of this. He doesn't know from this. He didn't read everything in the Mishnah Brura that he gave Haskama to. So he said, did anybody in his right mind ever say such a wild idea? That if you tie the tzitzis on, you didn't say beferish, that you're doing it shmo, that it's no good. Everybody ties it on with that amira. All you have to have is kavana. He says, a davar pashut. And Mishnah Brura made a whole chumrah that if you tied on the tzitzis without amira, he says you put two and two together. If you say that you need lishmo, and you say lishmo needs amira, so he says maybe the tzitzis would be possible. Is it essential to have atifo? You have to put the talis over your head. So there was a Rishon who lived in Vienna, the Orzarua, Rabbeinu Yitzchak Orzarua, and he was the end of the Bali Atesis. And he had a son, Rabbeinu Chaim Orzarua, Maharach Orzarua. So we have a small sefer, Shalas and Shubas of Maharach Orzarua, the son of the Rabbeinu Yitzchak Orzarua. So the Maharach Orzarua raises... He comes up with a new idea. Since when the Torah, the days of Maimon HaSinai, when the Torah was given to the Jewish people, the normal way to wear a beged was to wear the beged over your head, not to wear a separate hat and a separate jacket and a separate trousers. They used to wear like in Afghanistan. They wear a big sheet and it goes around the head and goes around the whole body. So the mitzvah in our Torah to wear tzitzis only applies if you have a beged that you wear about tifa. If you have a beged that you wear on your shoulders, you don't wear about tifa, so it's not chayv in tzitzis. So we really don't accept that opinion. We wear an arba kamfas of it. But lechumre, so that's what the poskim recommend to be choshish for the position of the Maharach HaZarua. They say when a person says the bracha, l'satet b'tzitzis, he should do atifa over his head, at least at the time of the bracha. And then in Shulchan Aruch they have minhagim that during certain parts of the davening also, people should wear the talis over the heads. When is that? So different minhagim went. So Rav Soloveitchik said his family practice was that when you participate in a davar shebikdusha, when the chassan says baruch hu, you're answering. When the chassan says kaddish, and you're answering kaddish kedusha baruch hu. Whenever one participates in a davar shebikdusha, so the achrayim say one should have a tifa, should wear the talis over his head. And then another time that one should have the talis over his head is b'shas shmona esra, based on the pasuk in Tehillim, Tfila liyoni ki yatov. It used to be an unknown pasuk until they evacuated all the Jews out of Gush Katif, so they made a niggun out of it. Tfila liyoni ki yatov, lifnei Hashem yishpach sicho. So the simple pshat, Tfila liyoni ki yatov, the poor man, davens takodesh bochum, when he's bellowing over in pain, ki yatov, when he bends over in pain. So another level of interpretation, which is not pshuta, tefila li'ani, when the ani davens, ki atof, he does atifa, he wears the talis over his head. So that was in many communities, that was the meaning, that they wear the talis over the head, b'shas shmona esrei, and b'shas when they participate in answering a davar shebikdusha. Magen Avraham writes that there are two practices, how many nikovim, how many holes do you make in the beged? Everybody makes one hole and you tie the tzitzis through. And the Arizal had a practice, you make two holes and you pull the chutim to the back of the beged, you pull it back out and it comes out in front. So the Magen Avraham says that this chumra of the Arizal, should, those who want to follow this, should only follow it on the talus kotz. You shouldn't do this on the big talus because mechzik yuharo. It looks strange that you're having a chumra and you're showing everybody what you're doing. So the Hasidim usually follow this Arizal, it's Kabbalah, so they have two holes on the talus cotton. On the big talus they don't because of this Magen Avraham. I remember when we learned Hilchas Tzitzis, Rav Soloveitchik said, there's room to argue with the whole Arizal. You can say that if you have two holes, you're not Yotze. Maybe it's only kosher if you pull it through one hole. So he recommended we shouldn't follow the Arizal. The Gemara has the rules and regulations how close the hole has to be to the corner of the beggar. It can't be too close to the corner, it can't be too far away. The person has to make sure that he has the nekev in the right location. Then there's a question regarding the chutei atzitzu, should they be exposed or should they not be exposed? So the simple reading of the Mishnah Brura is that he's quoting those who say that the chutei atzitzu should be exposed. It says, Arisa Mosa, you should see the tzitzis. Hacham Avadya writes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should forgive the Achenu Ashkenazim who violate the proper practice. He says, based on Kabbalah sources, Sfardim follow the Kabbalah, that the chutei atzitzus are not supposed to be exposed. They should be hidden. There used to be a prominent... Pardon me?
Even on the
Talis Gadol? No, Talis Gadol, the whole Talis is exposed, right? Talis cut. There used to be a prominent Talmud Chacham here in New York, Rabbi Gustman, who went through the war. He was in Siberia, then he was a big Talmud Chacham. He came to America, and Yosef Yomov, he had a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, passed away. So he was on the Beis Din of Rav Chaim Moiz at a very young age, the age of 18. He was appointed to be a member of Rav Chaim Moiz's Beis Din. So on one occasion, he told all his students, on one occasion, the Chavetz Chaim came to Vilna to discuss something with Rav Chaim Moiz. So he noticed that the Chavetz Chaim's Arba Kampis, the tzitzis, were not exposed. So he had the chutzpah to go over and ask him. But in the Mishnah Berurah it says the chutim are supposed to be exposed. So he says, I beg your pardon. It doesn't say that in the Mishnah Berurah. And he says, you read it wrong. So that's different practices, whether the chutim of the tzitzis on the Arba Kampis should dafke yes be exposed or dafke not be exposed. Okay, very good. Next week I think we're supposed to discuss the topic of Aliyah L'Har HaBayis.